heart of our nation's capital. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas. Welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, we are still in Georgia, broadcasting again today from Truett McConnell University. Last night, we hosted a Pray Vote Stand Georgia rally. We'll have some highlights from several of our speakers a little later when FRC Action Vice President Brent Kylan joins me here in our makeshift studio. And more good news out of the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday on religious freedom. A majority of the justices siding with the churches that were pushing back against the double standard of a number of governors who were employing these tactics to shut down the churches. Kevin Daly with the Free Beacon joins us to talk about how the dominoes are falling in favor of churches after the New York decision. And speaking of religious freedom, the Trump administration continuing to adopt rules that respect religious organizations that seek to partner with the government. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Alex Azar, is here with the details. And how many Made in China stickers do you have hiding under your Christmas tree? Well, Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Ken Cuccinelli, says, buyer beware, you might be aiding something that, quite frankly, you don't want to. We'll be talking about that when Ken joins us a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it is at T Perkins. And let me again remind you, as we are moving toward the end of the year, we've been given a very generous challenge grant that has come from friends of FRC. And essentially, everything you give between now and December the 31st will be doubled. And, of course, we receive no government money, none, zero, zilch. We're here because of you, because of supporters like you across the country that want to hear the truth, who want a voice in Washington, D.C. And so go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can be a part of keeping Washington Watch going out across the nation. All right, as I mentioned, the Supreme Court yesterday, some significant cases on religious freedom, on churches. One out of Colorado. We've had positive decisions in the Ninth Circuit where churches that have been fighting for some time now are getting relief. The U.S. Supreme Court telling governors, hey, back off. You're employing a double standard. And it all kind of goes back to a really important decision just a couple of weeks ago out of New York when the slapdown of Governor Cuomo took place. Join me now to talk more about this. Kevin Daly, Supreme Court reporter for the for the Washington Free Beacon. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Tony, it's good to be with you. Merry Christmas to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Same to you. Kevin, you've kind of put this together where the dominoes are falling. It began with the Supreme Court in right at Thanksgiving blocking New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's worship restrictions. Now this is going all across the nation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I like that idea of the domino effect because I think it's a nice visual for what is happening in all of these cases. As you say, on Thanksgiving, the Supreme Court, on a 5-4 vote, said that Governor Andrew Cuomo's worship restrictions in force in New York State were unconstitutional. Those limits restricted church attendance to 10 to 15 people per entity. Since then, we have seen a number of emergency appeals reach the Supreme Court from California, from Colorado, and New Jersey. And in all of those cases, we saw lower courts siding with blue state officials and upholding these church attendance limits. And what the Supreme Court has done is erase all of those decisions and tell the lower courts, have another swing at this, take another look. And when you do that this time, watch what we did in the New York case and follow our lead. So they are sending, they've done this, as I say, on three occasions since December 3rd. So they're sending a very clear signal to the lower courts about the direction of these religious liberty challenges.
Yeah, Kevin, I found it interesting in the dissenting opinions yesterday with the liberal minority where they were saying, well, I mean, the governors here have already changed, I think it was pointing to Colorado, already changed his rules. But just like I think it was Justice Gorsuch in the New York case said, wait a minute, just because he changed the rules as the petitioner was getting to the courts doesn't mean they cannot come back and do it another time. So what's important about these cases cases, it appears to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but as these cases are going forward, it's going to keep these governors from reverting back to these overreaching guidelines that they're placing on churches.
Yeah, I think that's right, Tony. I think we are not going to see a kind of reversion back to the original pandemic restriction policies. You mentioned Justice Gorsuch and his concurrence in the New York case. He has a very nice line in response to this argument. And the argument is, you know, blue state officials will amend their coronavirus policies at the last minute when they get when these cases get to the Supreme Court, trying to head off a defeat. And Chief Justice Roberts and the liberal minority have gone along with that. They've said, look, this case is moot. And if these restrictions arise again in the future, the churches can just come back to us and we'll see what we can do for them then. But Justice Gorsuch has this very punchy line in concurrence. He says, none of us are rabbis wondering whether future services will be disrupted as the high holy days were, or priests preparing for Christmas. That's a quote from his opinion. In essence, he's saying it's easy for you dissenters to say that the plaintiffs should just live with the uncertainty, but things look very different from the perspective of a church or a synagogue.
Yeah. Very well said. And to imply somehow that it's easy just to knock at the door of the Supreme Court, I mean, it takes months, if not years, to get before the Supreme Court. And I think many of these power-hungry governors are playing this not only to save a defeat, but also to save their power for another day.
Yeah, and I think, you know, these restrictions, of course, you know, will only be enforced for so long as the pandemic is an issue. But I think one thing to keep an eye on going forward is as the pandemic begins to recede, as the vaccine becomes, you know, more available to the public, for how long will blue state officials try to keep these worship restrictions in place? We have already seen lots of public health experts say even after you get the vaccine, it's going to be important that you wear masks for the foreseeable future, possibly all the way through 2021. Whether or not they will attempt to do the same with these worship restrictions is an open question. Although, again, I think the plain signal at this point from the Supreme Court is that's not going to be tolerated.
Yeah, and Kevin, one of my concerns all along has been, you know, there'll be another pandemic, there'll be another crisis, and where we leave off with this one will be where we begin with the next one. And so I think it's extremely important, and I've spoken to a number of the attorneys in these public interest law firms that are defending some of these churches, not to to back up once the rules are changed or if a governor, you know, gives them what they want, but to press this forward so that we are establishing in law the supremacy of the First Amendment and the just how foundational religious freedom is in our society, and how the way we keep it is by exercising it.
And I think to that point, that the precedents that you have or the decisions that we have seen from the Supreme Court of late are encouraging. Really, we've heard two things from the conservative majority in recent cases. One, religious rights are special. As you say, Tony, the First Amendment protects them. So strict scrutiny, the toughest degree of judicial review, is going to apply anytime there is a worship restriction in play or a church attendance limit in play. Second, and this is a closely related point, a lot of blue states have tried to justify these restrictions by saying it's true, we've set limits on church attendance or religious education, but we've applied those same limits against similar secular activities like concert going or watching movie in the theaters. So, you know, any activity in which large numbers of people are arriving and departing at the same time, spending time together in an enclosed space, those are all going to be subject to our attendance limits. And on that point, what we've heard from the justices, and this, you know, I think will be good law for a long time going forward, is it doesn't matter if the state is subjecting churches and all like entities to these attendance caps. It's no answer to say that the concert venues are closed too. What matters is that some secular entities like the liquor store or the fly fishing shop are still open. And once the state starts creating a list of favored businesses, it's on them to show why churches are excluded, something they will very rarely be able to do.
Yeah, no, great, great point. Of course, I know I don't want to mix apples and oranges, but in reality, the effect is the same. One of my pet peeves in all of this is the way airlines are treated. I know it's governed by the federal government, but I'm on planes two or three times a week, and every seat packed, people sitting elbow to elbow for hours. That's okay, but sitting, a few people in a pew for 60 minutes, 90 minutes, not okay. It's hard for me to wrap my head around why there is a double standard, and I think that's what the court is getting at.
That's true, those double standards are going to be increasingly difficult to maintain going forward. One other thing I would say is in May, we saw an opinion from the court in which worship restrictions for Nevada were upheld, and Chief Justice Roberts wrote a very short separate opinion saying, in essence, that state officials should be given broad latitude to respond to the pandemic, and that courts really should not interfere with them. That decision was really very important. It's been cited over 100 times in the lower courts over the summer and the fall, upholding various COVID restrictions, some not even having to do with religion. And in these cases, first the New York case and the three cases from California, Colorado, and New Jersey we've been talking about, mark a sharp departure from that kind of hands-off approach that the Chief Justice and his liberal colleagues were espousing in the early phases of the pandemic.
So is that decision already in the dustbin of history?
I think it's safe to say that that's right.
Well, that's good. Kevin Daly, thanks so much for joining us. Great information and a very insightful piece that you wrote at the Washington Free Beacon. Thanks for joining us today.
Take care, Tony. Be well.
All right, Kevin Daly, to find out more. By the way, the Washington Free Beacon is a great resource for you. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over to see Kevin's piece. Look, this is what we were talking about in terms of the court with Amy Coney Barrett. We now see a majority defending religious freedom. And as we said, the domino's falling in our favor for a change. So this is good news. That religious freedom is being defended, because as I've been saying all along that I brought up with Kevin, where we leave off in this pandemic is where we begin in the next crisis. And one thing I've learned over the last 20 years, as I've observed, I should say, over the last 20 years, is that these crises that we're facing, they're not one-offs. We think, just this. Look, we've seen natural disasters. We've seen these pandemics. We've seen, elections. I think this is a part of what the scripture says, the birth pangs. This is as we move toward the end of time, and I'm just, this comes right out of scripture, that we're going to see these type things, tribulation. And I'm not talking about the tribulation. I'm just talking about the precursor and what is happening. And I think we would be foolish to think, oh, this isn't going to happen again. I think we need to be prepared to be facing these types of challenges, and how we respond individually, as churches, and as a society and government to these pandemics. It sets a precedent and a pattern. All right. Don't go away. On the other side of the break, some good news, some more good news. Would you like some more good news today? Secretary Alex Azar with the Department of Health and Human Services joins us to talk about a new final rule that 9 federal agencies announced earlier this week protecting religious freedom. And as I mentioned, Brent Kylan's going to be joining us a little bit later with some highlights from last night's Pray, Vote, Stand Georgia rally that we had here at Truett-McConnell University. So don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch to come right after this.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll, it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold. Back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you'd like to partner with us as we move toward the end of the year, we've got a generous match, a $1 million match, a challenge match. So essentially whatever you get between now and December the 31st will be doubled by our supporters out there to make sure Washington Watch continues. So go to TonyPerkins.com and partner with us today. Earlier this week, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced a joint final rule. That means it's final, with eight other agencies that will treat faith-based and secular organizations involved in HHS-supported programs equally, meaning faith-based programs get to operate the way faith-based programs operate. The biggest victory in this rule is that faith-based organizations do not lose their legal protections and rights as a religious organization just because they participate in federal programs and activities. At the end of the day, that's what makes these organizations effective. It's their faith. Joining me now to get the details of this joint final rule is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar. Secretary, welcome back to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to say that this administration has never stopped defending life, the sanctity of human life, rights of conscience, and religious freedom. Here we are, you know, final period of this administration and still working to solidify the protections for religious freedom.
Well, we are continuing in our fight to protect life from the moment of conception through natural death. We, in fact, just came from an important event the Vice President hosted with members across the faith-based community and the pro-life community, thanking them and you for your support really throughout this whole first term, because it's only been with your backing that we've been able to make so many critical advances in the cause of life as well as to protect religious liberty.
So, Secretary Azar, explain to our listeners why this rule, coming from, I think, a total of nine agencies, is so significant.
Well, it's really important because what had happened was previous administration had really put a scarlet letter on any faith-based provider and said, if you're a faith-based grantee, a faith-based provider, you actually have to announce that to grant to any beneficiaries, and you have to point them to non-faith-based providers of services. And that's just, we found that to be an intolerable burden and discrimination against faith-based providers in our system. And so across these many agencies, we put out a joint rule making it clear that faith-based organizations are able to participate in our programs on an equal footing without regard to the exercise of their religious freedom and conscience rights. So a very important leveling of the playing field that was long overdue.
But also recognizes the distinctive of these organizations. If their faith wasn't there, most of them would not be nonprofits. That's what motivates them is their faith. These faith-based organizations, they would just be another secular organization. So, in effect, they were either being denied entry into these contracts to provide services if they didn't check their faith at the door or declare it as it was as somehow a disqualifier, a scarlet letter, as you said. And this simply says they're going to be treated like everybody else. You do the best. You provide the best service based upon your what you do and how you do it. And, hey, you can participate.
That's right, because it is for precisely the reasons you say, what makes these providers work is their sense of mission and commitment, and that mission is based in a faith belief. And we cannot and should not remove what makes these organizations unique, what makes them able to deliver high-quality services, and try to purge that from them as the condition of participating in these federal programs to deliver services on our behalf. So really important.
Okay, Secretary Israel, let me ask you this question. Let's say another administration comes along at some point. Will it be difficult for a not-so-friendly faith-based administration to undo this?
Well, so with our many accomplishments, we have worked always to make sure that we've done them the right way, procedurally correct, and that's why we've had such a string of successes in the courts. We use notice and comment rulemaking. We fully consider all comments. We have a rationale for what we do. It's based in the text and statute, the text of statutes as well as the Constitution, all of our actions. And so if there were a different administration coming along, they would have to follow a process of equal dignity and, frankly, take the same amount of time. A lot of these take a great deal of time to go through. But they'd have to be able to articulate rationales for why an agency was completely reversing a position. And a court would scrutinize that quite carefully as to, you know, what would be the rational basis for that type of a shift in position. So we've tried to make these as enduring and as difficult to modify as possible.
I heard a key word there, courts, because if they change these rules and begin to discriminate against organizations that, as you said, there's no rationale for it, they could end up in court. And, you know, we've actually had some pretty good judges put onto the bench. So it may be a little hard for a not so faith friendly administration to unravel these.
That's right. I don't think it's simply stroke of the pen. It'll really require a great deal of work because our team has put that work in. We've thought carefully about these matters. We've considered all comments thoroughly. We've explained our consideration of them. And that's the process that courts under the Administrative Procedures Act would require for any subsequent administration to attempt to unwind, minimize, or mitigate the advances we've made. And remember, our actions are based in protecting some of the most fundamental rights of conscience. And so actions to the contrary are those that actually are trying to take away the rights of conscience and free exercise of religion. And so those actions should also be scrutinized with a higher level of scrutiny by the courts.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I want to say thank you for joining us today, but also for an outstanding track record of defending religious freedom, the rights of conscience, and the sanctity of human life. You've done an outstanding job as Secretary, and I just want to thank you on behalf of all of our listeners.
Thank you, and your support has always been critical. Thank you.
Secretary Alex Azar, Department of Health and Human Services. And you know what, folks? We're going to fight to protect these gains that have been made. And there's ways to do it, and we will do it. All right, don't go away. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Ken Cuccinelli from the Department of Homeland Security talking about buyers beware of what that label says on that product you buy. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I'd definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. We're again broadcasting today, as I mentioned, from Truett McConnell University in northern Georgia, as we've got a number of events lined up here. In fact, last night, you're going to hear just a minute with Brent Kylan about our Pray Vote Stand Georgia rally that we had. But first, you know, as you're doing your Christmas shopping, if you turn some of those things over and you look closely, you're bound to see a lot of Made in China stickers. Now, over the last 20 years, we've seen a steady growth in the number of products imported from China. And there's a growing concern today over our trade with China, not just because of the financial deficit that it's created with them, but a widening moral deficit, as many of these products are being made with forced labor. Take cotton, for instance. China produces about 20% of the world's cotton supply, but a large portion of their exported cotton is being produced with forced Uyghur labor. Joining me now to talk about China's latest human rights abuses and why you need to be careful when you're shopping is Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, our good friend Ken Cuccinelli. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Tony, good to be with you.
Now, you recently wrote an op-ed about this saying, shoppers beware. What do they need to be aware of?
Yeah, and you noted, you know, you flip those things over and you see a lot of Made in China labels. And for cotton products, 7/8 of it is made in this Xinjiang province in northwestern China, and overwhelmingly with forced labor, slave labor, by entities run and managed by the Communist Party of China. And they, frankly, make a profit off of it. And this is 1 to 3 million people. This is not small potatoes. So that's what they're doing to oppress the minority up there, to try to force them to adopt Han Chinese culture and abandon their own faith and abandon their own culture by force.
So while the Chinese may have a planned economy, the principles of supply and demand come into a effect here. If we, you know, if we have the demand and we buy this product, they're going to continue to supply it. So indirectly, those companies that, well, maybe not so much indirectly, but the companies that certainly use right. that cotton, and then us as consumers, we indirectly are supporting this forced labor.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we have laws on the books in the United States that allow us to block these imports when we can identify them. And part of the challenge is if you're the Chinese government, you're not going to point to us which one was made by the slave labor and which one was made in ordinary open competition where the laborer had the choice of whether to work there or not. So it's a great challenge when we can't exactly go send investigators into their country. We gather information in all sorts of ways and have issued withhold release orders which block these imports at the ports of entry, at the Los Angeles port, at Newark and New York and so forth around the country. And we've literally stopped hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of these products. But ultimately, as you pointed out, Tony, it's supply and demand here. If people simply refuse to buy these products, that is the best policeman of all is the consumer.
Yeah, so we need to put these cheap products in perspective when we're thinking about why are they so cheap, and when you don't
right.
have to pay the labor, well, that certainly makes them cheaper, but it comes at a high moral price. Now, Congress has actually tried to address some of this with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which passed the House but has been held up in the Senate, in part because some big companies have been opposing it.
Yeah, that's quite true. And, you know, they don't necessarily appreciate when we issue these withhold release orders, but we've issued more of them in the last year than ever before, certainly directed at Xinjiang. We've literally issued more in the last year than all previous years combined. So as we develop more information, and we try to do that with nonprofits, with other countries like Australia, with individuals who escape, get their evidence and so forth, we will continue to expand this effort. And it does have broad bipartisan support, so it's not one of those things you'd necessarily expect to change from administration to administration. This is something Americans genuinely believe in. We are against slavery. That should be no surprise, right? But this is where the rubber meets the road. It's with products like these.
And there is a part that every consumer can play. You know, we talk about Congress passing laws. We talk about business being responsible. But ultimately, we as consumers have more influence than we often recognize. And as you said, it's by
True.
What we choose to buy or not buy. That sends a pretty strong message.
Well, that's right. And you exercise your own individual moral authority by making that choice. And, you know, we don't need to look to government to address every problem. We can address some of these problems one small bit at a time ourselves. And there's a case to be made for that on a moral level, as you noted, not just a legal level. I'd also point out, you know, you mentioned, Tony, these products can be sold more cheaply, of course, because we're using slave labor. Well, that does nothing for American workers. It cheats them, too.
You're absolutely right. So we don't need to look to government to solve this. We simply look to the label. Turn it over. See where it's made. Ken Cuccinelli, thanks so much for joining us today. As always, great to talk with you.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you, Tony. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well. Ken Cuccinelli, Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, issuing a buyer's beware warning. Turn it over. See where it's made. Buy American, if possible. All right, folks, don't go away. Coming up next, FRC Action Vice President Brent Kylan is here to talk about last night's Pray Vote Stand rally. Hello, this is Tony Perkins. With the balance of power in the U.S. Senate on the line, the runoff elections for Georgia's two U.S. Senate seats on January the 5th may be the most important Senate elections of our lifetimes. The outcome will have a profound impact on the future of faith, family, and freedom for all Americans. That's why we're inviting you to join us in North Georgia for our Pray Vote Stand Georgia rally Tuesday, December the 15th at 7 p.m. Join me, Congressman Doug Collins, Congressman Jody Heiss, Congressman Louie Gohmert, Todd Starnes, Abraham Hamilton, and others, as we join together to discuss how we can get involved. The rally will be at Truett McConnell University in Cleveland, and again, it starts at 7 p.m. For more details, visit PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org. This rally is sponsored by FRC Action and AFA Action.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com/ways to read.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It is beginning to look like Christmas, although I will say in Georgia here, it's beginning to look like an election. Yet another one. Runoff election on January the 5th, two U.S. Senate races. First time this has ever happened since direct elections of the Senate. Since over 100 years ago, since used to be the state legislatures would appoint senators. And then in 1916, I think it was the election, 1918, direct election of senators. And so here you have coming down to one state. You have two Senate seats in a runoff election. Now, generally, they're not in the same cycle, but because of a special election, you've got two Senate seats being decided on the same day, which will decide control of the United States Senate. Never happened before. So all the eyes of the world, literally, are on Georgia. And so that's why we're here. Last night we had a Pray Vote Stand Georgia rally here at Truett McConnell University. And joining me now to give us some of the highlights of last night's event is FRC Action Vice President Brent Kylan. Brent, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
So a pretty exciting night last night here with the rally.
It really was, Tony. And like you said, I mean, this is really a historic election. And you could, I think, really sense that energy from the people here and from the speakers. You know, this is just the state's here are incredibly high. And that was, I think, one of the themes that came out last night. We had some tremendous guests. I know you're going to get into that a little bit later here, but several members of Congress, other speakers, and just really talking about the importance of everybody, making sure they don't sit this out, making sure everybody does what they can do to get out, vote their values, get your friends and family to do the same thing for the January 5 runoff.
Yeah, you mentioned several members of Congress. We had Congressman Jody Heiss, we had Congressman Doug Collins, we had Congressman Louie Gohmert, and others. But you talked about everybody doing their part. That was the message that Congressman Heiss had. Bobby, play clip number 3.
It's we the people. We are the governing authority. We are the power that makes this work. It's not government down to the people. Ours was a structure of we the people, and our system does not work unless we the people are engaged in this and actively involved.
And Brent, that's exactly why we are here in Georgia.
That's exactly right, Tony. And one of those things, you know, really, Congressman Heiss talking about being engaged. When we look at these Senate runoffs, we have a very clear differentiation of the records on these candidates, which is something that is so important for our, the listeners to know, people here on the ground in Georgia know. But also, as we covered last night, we equipped them with some information to go and share that information with some other people. If you look at candidates, you have Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, who on our FRC action scorecard, which scores the votes impacting faith, family, and freedom, have been true blues. That means they're getting 100%, and they have really stood up for some very important issues. On the other hand, you have Raphael Warnock, you have John Ossoff, who are taking some very extreme positions. One that comes to mind is neither one has been willing to condemn birthday abortion. We've got the Born Alive bill we've talked about. Neither one has come out in support of that. They've got some pretty extreme positions on judges and just some other very, very important issues for Georgia and for the country.
Yeah, you talk about the contrast between them last night. Ralph Reed, who we're working with here in Georgia. He's from Georgia, his organization based here, Faith and Freedom Coalition, and we're working with him. And he made that point last night. Bobby, play clips 15 and 16.
In my lifetime, there has never been a starker contrast or a wider chasm on philosophy and issues than between these four candidates. And if they win these two seats, make no mistake about it, the first thing they do after they make Chuck Schumer majority leader of the U.S. Senate, the first thing they will do is they will abolish the filibuster. And when they do that, we lose all minority rights. Once they can do anything with 50 votes, with Kamala Harris breaking the tie, they will then pack the Supreme Court. They will then admit new states to the Union, starting with Guam, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. 6 new liberal senators from those 3 states. They will be able to pass massive tax increases. They will gut the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They will pass the Green New Deal. There's no telling what kind of a agreement that they will ratify with Iran that is devoted to the destruction of the United States and the state of Israel. Now, folks, that's what's on the line in just 19 days.
You know, and someone say, "Well, they wouldn't do all of that." They've actually said they would do that. And a lot of that is in the Democratic Party platform.
That's right, Tony. And again, that's why, you know, looking at this race, as you mentioned earlier on the show, this is really not just about Georgia. You know, all of those things that that were discussed, those then go on to set precedent and affect us all nationally. And yeah, you're right. A lot of these positions that have been laid out by the candidates, exactly. These are outlined black and white in the party platforms.
Oh, part of last night's event, one of our co-sponsors was American Family Association, and Abe Hamilton, who is on Hamilton's Corner on American Family Radio, was with us last night. And, you know, he brought it into key focus, as others did, on the issue of socialism and what the left is pushing. Bobby, play clip number 5 and 6 for us.
There's a conversation circulating around this idea of socialism as if it's somehow instantly reclassified as kinder and gentler. You know, the death, poverty, and destruction that has always followed socialism all of a sudden vanishes into thin air if you put the word democratic in front of it. You know, if you vote for it, it somehow becomes something entirely other than we have known it to be throughout history. But if you think putting the word democratic in front of socialism makes it kinder or gentler, I have news for you. You'll vote for socialism, but once. But once. This is a showing up time for the state of Georgia that has repercussions for the entire country.
That's the exact point you're making. It's an election here in Georgia, but it affects the entire nation. And I think he makes a great point. You can only vote for socialism once, because once you put them in, you've got a totalitarian government going forward.
That's right. I thought he did such a good job of making that case, Tony, and talking about how, hey, in that situation that he was sharing with our audience, there was an election that was involved. The people voted this in, not really realizing. You know, not looking maybe into those candidates as well as they should have, and that didn't go away. And Tony, I think one thing that really stood out to me listening to all of these speakers, because the stakes are so high, I'm seeing this, you're seeing this being here. Everybody's here in Georgia, left and right. You talk about
ads. Hard to get a hotel room.
It is. You know, the ads, we're seeing unprecedented amounts of money pouring in. We're seeing both left and right doing all kinds of get out the vote in mailers. And one of the speakers alluded to this, but it's so important that we all do our parts. And it really kind of reminded me of that story of Nehemiah, where, you know, everybody found their section of the wall to build on. And I think that's a good thing for all of us, whether or not you're in Georgia or out. Obviously, if you're not here in Georgia, you can't vote here. But there are other things you're doing. There are things groups outside are doing. Influence the people that you do know that are here. Write those people. Text those people. There's something that everybody can do to get involved, because these elections will have tremendous impact on everybody.
Yeah, and that was a point that Todd Starnes made, who was with us last night, about this is a great place to actually draw the line. Play clips number 10 and 11, Bobby.
I can't think of a better place to stop socialism than the great state of Georgia. But if you want to eat inside a Chick-fil-A, you're going to go and vote on Election Day. If you ever want to see your grandparents again inside their home, you got to go and vote on Election Day. If you want to reopen our churches, you better go and vote on Election Day. If you want to protect Christian universities like Truett McConnell, you're going to go and vote on Election Day. If you want to stop the radicals from packing our courts, you are going to go and vote on Election Day. And if you want to stop the godless socialist, and if you want to keep America great, you're going to go and vote on Election Day.
No equivocation there. He made it very, very clear, as did Doug Collins. Congressman Doug Collins was here last night. I tell you what, Brent, he was on fire.
He really was, Tony. You could tell he gets how important this is. And I wish I could take some of that energy, maybe put it in a bottle, because he was, like you said, he was really on fire, very energizing for the people listening in and watching here.
Let's play two clips from him. Clip number 7 and 8, Bobby.
It is by a strong military that this world stays safe. It is not by weakness. It is not by appeasement. It is about a strong military. That is where we need to go. The Senate cannot go the other way. It cannot be at a place in which business owners and people of faith are ever intimidated. It cannot be, as I have seen over the past few years. I have been fighting hard as an Air Force chaplain who is one who has had the ability to serve in Congress. I am tired of seeing the left try to attack the people of faith when in our military. And there happens to be a certain senatorial candidate in Georgia that says you cannot serve God and the military. I'm here to tell you right now, put on that uniform with pride, and I serve God as my master, my Lord and Savior, and I serve in the military because he gives me strength. It is time for conservatives to stand up and say, we are the ones who believe in people. We're the ones that do not back down. We have every right to say what we believe. Conservatives are the one that can actually look into somebody's eyes and say, I believe in you. No matter where you come from, what background you are, red and yellow, black and white, my scripture tells me they are precious in his sight. That is why we fight what we do.
I mean, it's hard to top that. As I said last night, he was on fire, but he knows what is at stake. And I so admire Congressman Doug Collins, because you know he was in this race for the Senate and he didn't come out on top. I've been there, I've done that before, and he turned around and he endorsed the Kelly Loeffler, getting behind her, and he was very clear about that last night.
He really was, Tony, unequivocal and just encouraging people, saying, hey, we've got no options here. You know, a lot of people want to take a break. We're tired after November, right? We're tired of the ads. We wish this was over, but we need to push on for a few more weeks. And I think one thing, Tony, that's important to remember, too, in the context here is we always talk about these January 5 runoffs, you know, January 5 Election Day. But early voting is underway in Georgia. Here, there's already been almost 1.5 million ballots cast. Last numbers I have seen, almost 500,000 ballots are in. So we have to remember, you know, those people who are in Georgia, you can go vote in person right now. Right. If you know somebody in Georgia, you can go vote in person right now. You don't have to wait. And just like we saw for the November election, you know, now that that has started, we are expecting to see, you know, that steady trickle every voting day between now and January 5, so we don't have to wait till January 5 to remind folks
and
get out.
And we've got voter guides at prayvotestand.org,
yes,
where if you, you're not certain where they stand on the issues, we'll help you. Prayvotestand.org. All right, I cannot wrap this up until we play a clip from Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, who was with us last night. And there's only one Louie Gohmert. Here's two short clips from our good friend Congressman Louie Gohmert. Play 12 and 13 for us, Bobby.
And I heard this over and over, and I came to hate hearing it. Louie, we don't have to worry. God's in control. And it was used as a cop-out not to do what we were put in place to do. And it was a cop-out not to use the tools that God gave us to accomplish what we were there to do, because it was easier not to. Yeah, God's sovereign, God's in control, but just because he's in control doesn't mean he wants us to lean on our shovel and pray for a hole. Isn't that right? So here we are in America. We've all been given tools, and voting is one of them. And he expects us to use it and to get out and vote.
Brent, I don't know how you summarize that any better than Louie. You know, we pray, but we vote, mm-hmm, and we stand. And the folks in Georgia, no matter what's been happening, no matter what the discouragement that might be there, the challenges that are there, we have got to exercise the right that God has given us and the responsibility, and that is to vote.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, Tony, you look at the stakes. That also means by you exercising your right to vote, you encouraging the people, you know, you also have the ability to be a part of something historic. And
yeah,
I think, you know, the opportunity here is really neat to look at, too. Yeah, there's a lot riding on this, but that means the impact, you know, the ability God has placed in front of you to make an impact on something very important is kind of exciting to think about, too, here.
Yeah. So don't lean on your shoulder and pray for a hole.
That's right. That's
get
right
out there and get busy. And by the way, we're about to wrap it up here, but we've got another event here in Georgia tomorrow with pastors.
That's right, in Atlanta. Yeah, and unpacking a lot of the issues there, going to be sharing a lot of these voting materials and, you know, getting those in front of them, things they can go and take back to their congregations to make sure that they have the information they need to really engage and make those informed decisions heading to up to January 5.
Yeah, and if you're a pastor here in Georgia, you can join us in the Atlanta area. It's real easy. We're going to be right outside of Atlanta tomorrow. That's Thursday. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over and join us. And Brent, let me thank you for joining me here today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate the opportunity.
And great job, you and your team, putting together last night's Pray Vote Stand Georgia rally here at Truett McConnell University. And folks, I want to thank you for joining us as well. Remember, lots of resources at TonyPerkins.com and PrayVoteStand.org. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.